Welcome everyone to iloverealestate.tv. You know, when you're investing in real estate, things are going to happen. No matter how much you learn, no matter how much I stay from stage, no matter how much I write and you take in or anything like that, you're going to run into stuff that you go, where did that come from? How am I going to handle that? Because things just come up. You know, it's not a perfect science. So I thought today it'd be really cool to talk about some of the obstacles that do come up and also how you deal with them. Some of the things of, you know, just the thinking process behind being solution-based instead of being, stuck in the problem. Because that's one of the biggest mistakes that I find that people make. When something does come up, they crumble. And you know what? That is the difference between someone who succeeds and someone who gives it all up. You know, they might be just short of making $100,000, $200,000, whatever it is, and they don't realize that they're so close if they could just get out of their head the victim mentality that comes with obstacles and get into being solution-based. Now, to help me out today, I've actually got one of my lead coaches with me. His name is Michael Timmians. Hey, Michael, how are you?
I'm very well, Dimna. Thanks for having me on the show. It's great to finally be on here.
Yeah, your first appearance. The first of many, let's say.
Okay, happy with that.
Now, let's first of all introduce you. Tell us, when did you join the I Love Real Estate community?
So I came across the I Love Real Estate community about four years ago. And it was after I'd been to a number of other seminars and done a bit of other education in the property field as well. And I guess I came along because I was still searching. I was still looking for answers in how you could build wealth, how you could, you know, amass a property portfolio that actually had some substance to it. You know, for a long time, I was sort of felt like I was chasing my tail a little bit, doing deals.
Why is that?
Well, I was doing deals and I understood the difference between sort of manufacturing growth and adding value to a property. But then, you know, I'd go and sell it, right? And I'd either, you know, make a profit or in some cases I made a loss. And, you know, that was sort of frustrating me a lot. And then it was this whole concept of how can you combine growth with cash flow, right? And this is kind of what twigged at the time. It's like, right, okay. So I started to peel back the layers a little bit more and started to find that there was a number of strategies that there were out there that you could actually use to increase cash flow, right? Meaning that you could actually hold the property and keep it in your portfolio while continuing to invest. So that ended up being the big difference for me, right? Is that's how I was able to sort of move forward and start accumulating property rather than just trading it.
See, one of my mottos, as you would know, is real wealth comes from accumulation, not trading. I mean, it's all very well to make money on a deal, and you know, you have to sell some properties, but the real wealth comes from accumulation, and the only way you do that is by having cash flow positive properties. You can't afford to keep accumulating negative properties. It just doesn't compute. You're going to run out of serviceability.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So when you started, you had you'd done a few deals, you'd made a little bit of money on that. Then you started to become part of the I Love Real Estate community. What changed then? What happened in your life? What type of deals did you start doing then? You focused on what sort of stuff?
Well, I've never been one to sort of just stand on the sidelines, I guess. You know, for me, it's whatever it is that I choose to do, I tend to immerse myself in it. And that's exactly what I did. I mean, it's called the I Love Real Estate community for a very good reason, and that is that it's a community. It's possibly the largest community of property investors in Australia. So that's exactly what I did. I just immersed myself in the community. I started having conversations with people about what they were doing. And often that's what I've found when I look back over my journey, is that that's made the biggest difference, is learning from other people, not just trainers, not just educators, not just influential people, but everyday heroes that are on the ground doing the deals.
Mm. That's exactly right. Okay, so you've done a few commercial deals, you've done a few removal houses, you've done all sorts of stuff, haven't you?
Yeah, I guess my experience is I've got quite a wide range. You know, I started off doing a lot of smaller cosmetic renovations, adding bathrooms, a couple of house relocations, and then I sort of moved into more subdivision strategy, townhouse developments. I've done commercial developments now, you know, share houses, and, you know, now starting to encroach into that share space, you know, how we can maximize and create
cash flow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so your background's pretty varied, and obviously, how long have you been with me now?
4 years.
4 years. And before you joined the I Love Real Estate community, how many houses did you actually have at that point in time?
None. So no investment properties at that time.
Because you'd sold them?
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Okay. So, and you're obviously gearing up now. You've got, you know, quite a few on the go. How many deals have you got running at the one time?
I generally try and keep it at about four. Okay. Four is active deals, right?
So as well as your hold properties.
Yeah, yeah, separate to the actual portfolio where I keep my long-term holds.
Yeah, good. Okay, so that's where you're at right now, and obviously you're continuing to build and whatever. But the big thing, obviously, is now that you're helping others, and you work with teams of my students to you know, hold their hand through the process and get them investing and get them active in the market and all of that kind of stuff through this Success Accelerator program.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know,
does that tick your buttons?
Yeah, I guess, like we were talking about before with property, I mean, it's very much a problem solution based sort of strategy, I guess. If you're going to look at investing and building wealth, it's very much having to rely on your creative instincts to come up with a solution to a problem. You know, it's got to the point where I feel like I'm a bit of a sicko. You know, I wake up in the morning and the first thing that pops into my mind is, I wonder what problems I'm going to have to deal with today.
Really?
Yeah, and to the point where it's not a bad thing, right? I actually look forward to it, because you'll get to a certain point where you're so used to dealing with the same problems that they become normal. And then all of a sudden, when you start to grow and you start to advance in your deals that you're doing, and they become larger and you're dealing with more people and there's more moving parts, then more problems arise. But what I've noticed is that on the other side of problems is creativity, and that's where I find that I get to be creative in that space, and that's what I enjoy. So I enjoy dealing with problems, but the thing that comes back to the education is that I get to give back now, because I've gone through the process of having to deal with problems. So if I can help other people avoid those problems, because let's face it, no one really enjoys problems, right? But if we can avoid as many problems as possible, then we've got more chance of success.
Mm. Okay. I'd prefer to call them challenges than perhaps problems, but anyway. Okay, so let's deal with some of the things that you've come across. What are some of the things that have presented themselves so far with you that you've been able to come up with some creative things to get around?
I guess financing is always a big one.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can...
That's everybody's bane of their life.
Well, if you can come up with a creative way to get around financing, then that's always going to help you expand on what you're doing. So you can obviously leverage off investors, joint venture partners, landowners, people who can see your vision or can see the creativity that you're putting on the table, and perhaps want to be part of that journey as well. I mean, other sort of creative ways that I've had to deal with things is, you know, using people that have got experience in the market as well. You know, I'm quite young and at times have been very inexperienced, and often that's taken, that can be taken advantage of. And using people in the market to help you along that journey and to come up with other creative solutions, I find is always a good way to do it as well.
Okay, well, I remember talking to you a little while back there about, this was actually before you joined the I Love Real Estate community, a problem you were having particularly with a builder. What happened there?
Yeah, so this was a project that I was involved in before I joined the I Love Real Estate community. It was actually quite a great project, and it had some fantastic profit margins in it. But you can never foresee you can't always foresee what's up ahead. And during the process of this project, everything ran pretty smoothly with town planning and getting all the permits in place. Financing was all sorted. And then it came to the point of allocating a builder. And it got to the point where I had two builders and two quotes that I was quite happy with after going through the process of getting about 10 quotes. And I chose the wrong guy.
Why was he the wrong guy?
Well, because it turned out that he was having some pretty big problems in his own business. And
so what could you have done differently in that selection process?
Well, I've thought about that a lot, not so much anymore. I was very thorough in my due diligence in what I did. in choosing that builder. You know, I contacted the Builders Practitioners Board to find out what sorts of if there was any prosecutions or complaints that had been put through in the past, which there wasn't. I contacted his insurance company, the underwriter, to find out, you know, how many currencies he actually had out for other jobs. Contacted other people that had built through him before.
So you contacted the contractors?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So I all been paid on time?
Yep, went through all the right sort of processes to do the right due diligence to make this decision. And it virtually came down to me as a cost, right? So he came in a little bit cheaper than the other guy, and that was how I based my decision. I was also getting a bit of guidance from someone else who was building with him at the time, and things were going great. What happened from there, though, is that things started to change. I noticed that he was dragging his feet. It took him a long time to get onto site and actually start doing some of the works. And then I started getting contacted by some of his other clients who had active sites that I wasn't aware of. He hadn't told me that, that weren't happy with the way that things were moving, and that had certain things had come up where they wanted to notify me, and they contacted me through the real estate agents that had sold the properties. So that's when I discovered that, hang on a minute, there's something not quite right here, and had to go down the path of getting some solicited advice, and it all kind of escalated from there, and that, you know, the contract went quite bad and I couldn't get out of that contract.
So he didn't finish the job?
He didn't finish the job. He'd only done the minor works at the beginning, like a site excavation, some retaining and a bit of the plumbing.
Mm-hmm. And how much had you paid him for that?
So up until that point, I'd paid him a deposit, a 5% deposit, and he was due for another payment for the works that had already been completed. And at that point, I decided that, you know, I'm not ready to release this money because I'm not sure if he's going to finish the project. So that was when I started to engage solicitors to act on my behalf to see how we could get out of the contract fairly.
Mm. And what happened?
Well, that was coming up to Christmas time, and that whole process of getting, you know, quantifiers on site to do a costings of the works that had been done, and to find defect work in everything that had been done, took quite a while. So this dragged out for the space of about two or three months, until the point where the pressure built up so much that we ended up terminating the contract. I terminated the contract because he wouldn't come back and fix some of the defect work that had been done in the retaining
wall. So that was a condition in your contract that you could breach the contract, you could break the contract because he had breached the conditions of the contract. Is that right?
Well, I was in breach for...
You were in breach,
I was
for
in
not
breach
payment.
for quite a while because I hadn't paid him the stage that he was
exactly
owed. But I did that strategically because I knew that if I released that money that I was in the same position I was in before, where I had to jump and jump up and down and scream to get him back to site. So when I found that there was defect work and that he would need to come back and fix that, by that stage too much time had passed and the relationship had completely broken down. So I had to release the next payment to him, which was another 5%. So I'd completely paid out 10% of the contract price by this stage, which was very close to the amount of works that had been done on site.
Right.
And at that
except
point...
Except for the defects.
At that point, I was out of the breach. So I could then issue a notice for default work that he had a certain period of time to rectify, which he didn't. So then I was able to terminate the contract and go back to the other builder.
Okay, so looking at all of those things, getting out of the contract, I mean, how important were those solicitors? You know, you've got to have good property solicitors on board.
Exactly right. You know, the guy that I was working with was young, he had good morals, good ethics, and he could just see that what this guy was doing just wasn't right.
Yep. And did other people end up losing money with him?
Unfortunately, yes. I was, out of all of his clients, and I was in communication with all of them, I came off the best simply because I had education, I had the right mentors in place, I had the right community and support around me to help me through that tough time.
Mm.
You know, so it always comes back down to how good your professionals are and how good your team is.
Build your team.
I wouldn't have been able to do that by myself.
Yep. Okay, so you got out of that one pretty well.
I did.
What are some of the other things that have come up in your investing career, and how did you get around them?
Some of the other things that have come up, look, I mean, financing is always a tough one. You know, you've got to be creative in the timing of your finance, how you bring everything together. When you're talking about developments, I always see get to a very tricky point where you've got your permits in place, and most people will think, right, I've got my town planning permit, that's great, most of the hard work's done. Well, no, not really. Right, because from there you've still got to go and get all your endorsed plans, you've got to go get all your engineering done, all your working drawings, you've got to get builders contracts, you've got to set up your finance, and then you've got to go and get your building permit, right? But all of that lead up to that building permit, you've got to bring everything together, you've got to pull it all together. And that's what I find is the hardest part to doing, you know, a development. Mm-hmm. So I guess when you sort of get to the point where you've got to be creative with financing, it comes back down to your team. You know, who have you got out there looking for the right types of loans, the right types of products to get that deal across the line and pull it all together? The way that I look at it is developments are very similar to sharks. You know, if they stop moving, they die. And very much similar to a development, right? If it's halted, the thing will suck you and drain you for every dollar. So you've got to keep moving. You've got to be able to overcome those challenges, like financing, like getting all your endorsed plans, like getting your building permit.
And depending on the size of the deal, sometimes it's not just the finance. You've actually got to go get pre-sales.
Correct.
In order to get the finance.
Correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
How have you gone with tenanting and things like that? Because you've got a few commercial properties and that kind of stuff. What have you come across there with tenanting?
Yeah, so I really enjoy the commercial space. I think that it offers a lot of opportunity for people that are willing to think outside of the box. For instance, I've just finished off a deal at the end of last year where we bought a couple of shops, renovated those shops, and actually converted one of the larger shops into a residence out the back. And it's also got the potential to subdivide off some land at the back. Now, going into this deal, I was a little bit skeptical because I wasn't too sure on this particular commercial market, the tenancy market, right? Mm. So I did a lot of research. I got out there on the footpath, started talking to a lot of the locals, started knocking on the shop doors, talking to business owners. I joined the business committee as well in that particular area because, like I said before, I had to immerse myself in this market to really understand it. And
that's actually really important, you know, for all those listening right now. I always say it's you've got to become an expert in the area in which you're going to invest and in the type of property in which you want to invest in. So, you know, you've got to go, if you're in resi, you've got to go to the open homes, you've got to talk to the agents, you've got to go to when places sell, what land sells for, what rundown houses sell for, what renovated houses sell for, what new ones sell for, all this kind of stuff, and even down to things like finishes. In the commercial space, you've got to know who's looking for properties, who's in the market for what kind of properties, what kind of spaces rent better, you know, what sizes, what size does a mechanic want, what size does an insurance company want, what size does a whatever want, and what kind of rate do they pay per square meter for that kind of leasing. So this is where, again, we talk about it all the time, but the team is so important, and having in the commercial space a really, really, really good commercial leasing and sales agent is absolutely paramount.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. And, you know, there's a lot of other ways that you can go outside of that again when looking for tenants, right? Because I think one of the biggest misconceptions with commercial property, or not perhaps misconceptions, but one of the biggest fears when it comes to commercial property from an investor's point of view is, you know, what happens if my property becomes vacant? Mm. How long is it going to take me to get another tenant?
Yep.
So, you know, those concerns, were obviously there for me because I bought these properties vacant, right? Mm. There was a mortgagee auction. So
auction means cash unconditional, you've got to settle, etc.
Exactly. So for me, I had to think outside of the box when it came to marketing as well. You know, we did letterbox drops to the locals, we put flyers in the newspapers, we put ads up on Gumtree. And, you know, funnily enough, Gumtree was one of the larger converters when it came to inquiries.
Yeah.
Talking to the local business owners as well, one of my tenancies came from talking to one of the local businesses, one of the local hairdressers, and she said, I've got a client that keeps coming in here and she keeps asking me about that shop. You know, when's it going to come available? What are they doing to it? Who owns it? You know? So instantly there was a link there that I could follow up on to get that tenant. So, Yeah, it's funny when you think about it, because the two tenants that actually came through for both of those two shops didn't come from the agents.
You know, call it coincidence or what, but you know, the way that the contact came through the hairdresser, that's how things happen. It's when you put the intention out there for a desired outcome, things fall into place to assist you in that end. But if you don't think through those processes, if you don't know exactly what it is you're actually after and all the pros and cons and whatever, then you're not adjusting. I'll get a little bit technical now. Your reticular activating system in your head, which actually shows you what to focus on, and you don't hear that conversation, you don't go into that hairdresser, you don't have those coincidences, as we want to call them, that lead to your desired outcome, that person you meet, the conversation you overhear, all of that kind of stuff. So you had your radar working pretty well.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer that you're the master of your own destiny. There were other shops, you know, in this particular suburb that were vacant and sat vacant and are still vacant.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not always a case of, is it the property? No, it's more a case of, who do you have to be for this to be successful?
Yeah.
And that's where my shift occurred.
Mm. That's amazing. That's very good. Okay, so from a leasing perspective, big part of the commercial stuff. How'd you get over the fear of what if it's going to remain vacant?
Well, obviously we built the buffer into the feasibility, so we knew that I could hold that property for at least 12 months and still make a profit if it was vacant.
So what would you say to someone out there that was perhaps having a difficulty in some area related to property? What advice would you give them?
Having a difficulty in property, I would say give yourself or create the space for yourself to come up with a solution, whatever that difficulty might be. Now, that could be having conversations with people. I've proven myself time and time again that conversations with people, generally who you know or people who you don't know, are the most powerful sources for overcoming challenge and struggle. It's so often that someone else has dealt with the same problem or challenge or struggle, whatever you like to call it, that you are dealing with. And if they've already come up with a solution or they can help you with coming up with a solution, great. Things like meditating, giving yourself the space to actually come up with a solution and look within for a solution to whatever it is that you're dealing with, I found as well, you know, works really, really, really good.
And that's that pre-programming your RAS system. That's what it's doing.
Exactly. Reading. You know, a lot of people turn to reading to find answers. You only have to type into Google now, you know, the problem that you're having, and it's likely that someone else has dealt with the
same thing. Someone's done a YouTube clip on it. That's true. But even keeping your consciousness at a certain level of, you know, positivity, and that's where I guess the I Love Real Estate community really kicks into its own, because you're hanging around like-minded individuals who are out there kicking goals, taking action. They're not sitting on the sideline whinging and carrying on and blaming other people and whatever. They're out there doing it. And as you said, there'll be somebody who's had a similar experience of some sort that can, you know, assist you with some sort of advice, etc. As well as obviously the hierarchy of the I Love Real Estate community being yourself now, being one of the head coaches that you can turn to and ask.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we run so many events every year now where all of our team are there, we're present, we're there to help and assist. And we have so many people come up to us all the time that, you know, they just might have this one little niggly thing that they're working on or that's stopping them or that's blocking them from moving forward. And just by having a simple conversation with us, we're able to come up with a solution in the space of 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, so what are you doing to put yourself in those situations? What environments are you surrounding yourself to get those answers?
Yeah.
If you want to succeed, it's always going to come down to your external environment and how that creates an internal belief system for yourself.
Well, thank you so much, Michael, for coming and joining me on the I Love Real Estate podcast series.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. And I know that I'll have you back very soon talking about something else.
Look forward to it.
Okay, guys. Well, look, make sure you subscribe to iTunes. Make sure you, you jump on the iloverealestate.tv website. There's lots and lots of stuff on there for you. And I'll be back again to talk to you very, very soon on something completely different. Until then, talk to you soon. And thank you, Michael.
See ya.